Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now celebrating 17 years of broadcasting success, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience here in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM and WYADonline.com. We're glad that you all could be with us. Also, those tuning in through our online affiliates around the world, we're glad you all could be with us as well. Well, this next conversation is really a treat. I first interviewed Linda Appelman Shapiro on this program back in January 2015. So we're talking now going on 6 years ago, and definitely she has been on a journey since then. Her book is called She's Not Herself, A Psychotherapist's Journey Into and Beyond Her Mother's Mental Illness. We had a great conversation with Linda during that conversation. Actually, when I visited New York after that, we sat down for another great chat. But this year, Linda is celebrating the audiobook release of her book, She's Not Herself. It's out now at a very good price, as well as the Kindle edition of the book is only $3 right now. So we're going to talk to Linda not only about what it's been like for her to continue to share her story with the world, but also how it feels to have the new audiobook available for you guys to be able to enjoy, and we'll let you know how to stay connected with her as well. But Linda, hello to you, and welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much. It's so good to hear your voice again.
Same here. We were just talking about before we went on here, it's been a while. It was great to sit down with you in New York when I was there, actually after we had our first conversation. It's hard to believe
right.
It's been that long. But now, as I mentioned, you're celebrating, Linda, the release of the audiobook of She's Not Herself. And, of course, the Kindle edition is also on sale right now. First of all, how does it feel now to have the words that you wrote now being read for the world to enjoy?
Well, what's most important is that I'm reading the words. In other words, I'm narrating my own book. And I never, although that was always a dream in my head, I didn't expect it to ever come to fruition. I hoped that it would. I'm certainly not, you know, a trained actress, although I do give many lectures and I do talk a lot. in more ways than one. But just knowing that I am actually reading my own memoir is extremely rewarding and exciting, and I learned a lot about myself and my family from reading it aloud that I didn't know as I was writing it. It's just a phenomenal experience.
Yeah. Well, I have to say this, and you were asking me literally right before we went on if I had a chance to hear it. And I have to be honest, I'm not an audiobook guy. I love to actually read the books. I can't focus very well with audiobooks. So I have never bought an audiobook in my life, Linda. But I love actually being able to read words. So it's interesting hearing you talk about what it was like for you to read your own words. So let's go back then. Could you have imagined when you first released the book, She's Not Herself, that you would still be not only sharing your mother's journey in life, but also your own?
Well, actually, what I set out to do was to show that it's possible to interrupt intergenerational trauma. And by that I mean the trauma began way back with my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my mother, myself, and God knows, probably my children as well. And there are ways to do that, but as you probably know, even children of the Holocaust, their parents, many of them were very, very silent and didn't share anything, but they picked up in the air that something was wrong. You know, they always picked up something, but they didn't know what. And it's the same thing with trauma. It doesn't have to be trauma in the family necessarily. It could be trauma in a wedding, in a relationship, with friends, being bullied at school. Whatever traumatizes a person stays with them and sometimes is hidden because they can't face it. And writing the book for me was necessary in that I had to go back to my actual home in Brighton, which is really a bungalow, and Brighton is still peopled with immigrants. And I think that what excites me about my book today is that so much of what I wrote about 6 years ago is even more appropriate today, because it's about war, it's about immigration, it's about children being separated from families, and we know what's going on in the world today. And this year alone, psychotherapists and psychiatrists have seen probably more people who they're treating for depression and trauma than ever before. I don't have to tell you what this year has been like, and I don't have to tell the listeners what this year has been like. And so I hope that my book, and I believe from all of the people who have reviewed it, it's not a woe is me book, but it is definitely a book that takes the reader into the process of how to deal with and cope with and face with the traumas that you've experienced and that you can get through and beyond. You never forget them. You know, nothing that's ever horrible is forgotten, but it doesn't have to be up front, and it doesn't have to be something that you face every day. You can kind of make it smaller as an image in your head, as the voices that you hear, so that you don't have to live it every single day and relive it, and you can get beyond it, and you can move into places of hope. And that's what I, you know, that was my main intention. I didn't know how much I would remember by going back to my actual house and seeing the rooms, which are now occupied by Korean immigrants as opposed to Russian immigrants. And the rooms that they set up look exactly like our four rooms. It was uncanny. You know, two beds in the bedroom that I shared with my brother, the kitchen table in the exact same place that we had it. You know, it's a small, tiny apartment. And here were two different immigrant families years and years apart that were living in the same space, and who knows what their experience was, but the man who let me in was extremely lovely, and he and his family were running the fruit store that I used to purchase fruit for my mother on the corner. So I was able slowly but slowly to bring back memories that I absolutely were not at the front of my head at all. And in creating that life that I went through that was very, very traumatic, certainly in the first 10 years of my life before my brother took off for college, because he was my one ally, and the one person who brought life into the family, brought energy. You know, with my parents, it was very depressing and it was very unpredictable. But yet there was still a lot of love, and that's why I was very lucky. There are many people who live through terrible traumas, and especially with people who are depressed. You know, depression is like any other illness. There are depressed people who are lovely and who are beautiful, and I put my mother in that category. I don't know that other people would, but I certainly do. And there are depressed people who are awful. You know, they're mean-spirited, they're selfish, they're unkind. So we can't generalize. And when my mother was herself, the title of the book, as you know, is She's Not Herself, which was my father's euphemism for her when she wasn't herself, when she was having a breakdown. And she only started to suffer depression after the birth of my brother and what we would now call postpartum depression, which we now can treat, and a person doesn't have to live the rest of their life with recurrent depressions as my mother did. So we're living in different times. We have different medication. We have medication. There was no medication in her time. There were only shock treatments. But there are so many children who have been separated from parents, as we know. There are so many children who weren't in school, didn't have their normal lifetimes, and so many of them are now in therapy and needing medication, and so many adults who've lost spouses. You know, we're just living in very, very difficult and trying times. So I feel that if I can gift someone with any degree of hope from reading or listening now to me tell my story, that will be, you know, a real gift. It's a gift already because people are, you know, already letting me know what they feel about listening to my book, which I would strongly urge you to do.
Well, I want to interrupt you here, Linda, so I can get another question in here because we're already halfway through our segment.
Go ahead.
But I want to jump in, and I appreciate what you share, but I want to go back because I want, for our audience who have not read the book, I want to bring up some things from the book. You and I know the book, so that for them who don't, one of the things Linda talks about in Chapter 22 of the book, the chapter is Deception, Denial, and the Path to Healing, you mentioned a couple times when you were just speaking, Linda, about therapy and how people are taking advantage of therapy. You shared in the book in Chapter 22 about your taking advantage of therapy and what the therapist said to you. So I'm curious, as I read these words, what was it like for you, Linda Appleman Shapiro, to be able to read them yourself? And that is this: someday you will be able to embrace all of who you are. That's what the therapist told you. So what was it like for you, Linda, to read those words? Someday you'll be able to embrace all of who you are. And what has it been like for you to see that happen today?
I'll try to be as fast as I can. I would say until I was 10, until my brother left, you know, for college, I didn't have an identity. I was my mother's daughter, I was my father's daughter, and I was my brother's sister. And I focused only on them because nobody really focused on me except my mother. My father had no expectations for me because I was the daughter in an immigrant family. And if I got married, that would be great. If I had children, that would be great. But he had no expectations. My brother tried to, as I said, bring life into my life. But then he left when I was 10, and I was left with my mother and father. So, yes, when I did enter therapy, when I was probably a junior or a senior in college, and I realized that the adult in me who was had started to identify with my mother probably when I was in my early teens and I was starting to become a woman, I was getting very frightened that I would become like her and what would prevent that from happening. And so when the therapist said that to me, it was a gift because I now can look back and learn from the various therapies that I've had. And any good therapist, I was a therapist for 35 years, any good therapist is in therapy herself or himself. Because we're like everybody else. You know, we have issues that come up from time to time that we need to review with someone who can give us some insight and some strength. And, yes, I recommend that for anyone who feels that they're alone, that they have no one to speak with or no one who will listen to them. There are now suicide prevention hotlines, both text and, live speaking to, 1-800 numbers that people can get. And I think it's very urgent that people get the help that they deserve to have. It's a necessity because if it's not, we know what happens. You know, children get guns and use them. Adults become, you know, join cults that they should never join. And we have a world that is not the kind of world that is at peace. And so in order to bring peace into an individual's life, we have to bring peace into the whole world at the same time, and that is something that I fight very hard for with anybody that I know and that I love. And in reading my story, as opposed to writing it, I learned even more about myself, my parents, or what we all went through to survive and how each of us coped in different ways. And it was an incredible experience being able to read it aloud and to know that other people were going to hear it, both for the quality of writing, which I hope is still as excellent as it was in the reading process, but also in hearing my voice and hearing me, the person who lived it. That's the feedback I'm starting to get. It's only out a couple of weeks. So, yeah, it's very thrilling and very rewarding at my ripe old age, and I think you do know I just celebrated my 80th birthday. So to have this come at this time in my life is truly a gift. And I think it's a legacy I'm leaving not only for my children, as I said earlier, but hopefully for anybody who's looking for a way to be at peace with themselves, a way to find help, and knowing that they can, knowing that it's out there, they just have to seek it. There are wonderful, wonderful people out there who can help.
That's so true. I want to say for those who are just tuning in, who's on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're speaking with Linda Appelman Shapiro. We're discussing not only the journey of writing her book, She's Not Herself, A Psychotherapist's Journey Into and Beyond Her Mother's Mental Illness, but also the new audio book that is now available through our friends at Amazon. As well, as I mentioned, the Kindle edition is on sale right now as well, so you guys can take advantage of that. I will remind you of it. For those who are tuning in online, you'll find the link for Amazon actually with this conversation today. Last thing I want to talk to you about, Linda, and you kind of referenced, of course, turning 80. One of the things you talk about where your mother offered her own input was when it came to redefining yourself. And that was one of the own challenges that you had. I said in my review on Amazon of the book that that's the interesting thing about She's Not Herself. It shows that all of us have work to do. Your mother had her own work. You had your own work. You had your own insecurities to deal with. What was it like for you to finally realize your purpose? And even your mother saying that you seemed to be your happiest when you were in the classroom. What was that like for you to be able to discover that and your own desire to help others?
Well, that's a really good question. I think, quite honestly, and I don't mean to sound arrogant when I say this, but I think from a very early age on, because I knew, you know, chapter one is make mother happy. That's why I was conceived, because my mother had lost someone in her life, a brother-in-law who was probably the one person who gave her hope. And so the doctor told her to get pregnant because she could then focus on a baby, and that baby was me. I think it was in my DNA. I think I just knew that helping was very, very important, and being there for other people was very important. And I think I've passed that down, I hope I have, to my daughters. They are both very kind and very giving people, and I couldn't be prouder of them. So, it was a gift to know that I could give and that I could help. And when I helped people, the 35 years I worked as a psychotherapist, I still have old patients calling me from time to time, sending me Christmas cards, asking me how everything is and bringing me up to date with what's going on and asking me a question about their marriage or whatever. So you know that you've affected lives. I don't think there's anything greater that I could have done. As I told you before we went online, I've taken to painting in my old age, and I think any passion that you can have will take you to a peaceful place, and whatever that passion is, I think the arts probably are the best, you know, whether it's reading, writing, painting, whatever you can do that can bring you, or just listening to music, anything that can be relaxing and peaceful in this very uncalm world that we're living in. And I have to say one thing, Cyrus. I have no idea what you went through to get to be the kind of reader that you are. Of course, I'm trying to convert you into listening, but the kind of reader that you, the kind of reader that you are, because you just pick up on all the nuances and all the sensitive spots and areas that most readers do not, and most interviewers do not. And I thank you greatly for that. You certainly have put people on the map. You do a wonderful job of promoting others like myself, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I really do.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, I do have a couple more questions for you, Linda.
Go ahead.
And is one just based on what you just mentioned about the painting, because it reminded me of what you wrote in the book about Lori. It may seem like a small thing for the reader, but as you were just talking about discovering painting and what you've been able to do already, when you talked about Lori in the book and you talked about being on the beach and her saying basically, I could just stay here forever, and how time had just slipped away from you guys because being present there, what helps you to stay present at this point? What helps you to just enjoy the moment at this point in your life?
What helps me to stay present? I would have to say that it's that my painting, definitely. You know, you go into a zone when you're painting and 7 hours can go by and you think it's 2 hours.
Right.
And then you've created something. I think creating allows you to stay present. I think being involved with, if you have a family and you're blessed to have children and grandchildren, and staying in touch with them and sharing their lives allows me to stay present. I would say those are the major, I think family is very important to everybody.
Yeah.
And family
right.
doesn't have to be the family of your birth. It can be family
right.
from your church, from your temple, from any place that you belong to. You can, in my temple, we call it framily. People that, you know, that you belong to, that you weren't born into a family with, who remain close, and churches have it, and all gathering places have places where you can, or taking courses online. Anything that brings you into the moment and makes you feel alive keeps you in the present. If,
yeah.
if you don't feel alive in the present, then you're doomed to go back to the past and to places that you don't want to go back to that may not be pleasant. And the pleasant ones will always be there for you to go back to. But you don't want to necessarily go back to the unpleasant ones, especially if they're unresolved and you haven't gotten the help that you needed. So if you
yeah.
want to remain present at this time, if you want to remain present in this time, this very, very stressful, challenging time in all of our lives with what's going on in the world politically, what's going on in the world in every area, I think keeping one's focus on what gives you pleasure, what makes you feel good about yourself and the people in your life, and how you can help the world, not just yourself, how you can reach out and belong to groups or organizations or political organizations that fight for the causes that are important to you. That's very important. You can't just stay within the self.
Right.
I don't believe that leading a selfish life is what any of us really benefit from. I think we have to reach out, as I said, whether it's to family, friends, groups, organizations, online courses, whatever it is that will take you places that will make the world better and make you better, is what I would aim for.
Last question I have for you, Linda. As you now are celebrating not only the milestone of turning 80, but also the release of your audiobook, I want to ask you this question, because in the book you gave an example of what could be seen as a simple question, but as you mentioned, because of your own insecurities, you took it a different way, and that was you're being asked, you know, what do you do? I want to ask you, now that you have looked at what you've looked at, you've been able to review your life, now celebrating these milestones, what is it like for you to look in the mirror and to be proud of yourself?
Oh, it's kind of the way I end the book. I say when I look in the mirror, I see my mother's face, and there's a very strong resemblance. And she's with me at all times, and I say, I believe, I'm not quoting directly, I don't have the book in front of me, but I see her in the best of me and the rest of me. And so she always said if she were a writer and she could tell her story and it would help just one person, she would do it. But she's not a writer, you know, and English was her second language. But I wrote it, and I wrote her story. I wrote my story. I wrote my grandmother's story. And even my children are, you know, very much in the book as well. So I think that, does that answer your question?
It does. It does. And I think that is the thing, and hopefully our audience will get to a place where they can look at the mirror and also be able to love the person they see looking back at them and to be proud of themselves as well. Again, everyone, Linda Appelman Shapiro has been our guest. She's Not Herself is the book, A Psychotherapist's Journey Into and Beyond Her Mother's Mental Illness. It's available now in print, in Kindle for a great price, as well as the audiobook at a very good price for those who listen to audiobooks. Well, you can definitely be able to take advantage of that great deal there. And Linda, you have a website as well. How can our audience stay connected with you?
Yes, www.appelmanshapiro.com, or they can write to me directly at beyondthetrauma@gmail.com, and I will answer anybody who wishes to contact me. I would welcome it.
All right. Linda, congratulations to you again on the release of the audio book, and, of course, on the milestone this year and all the great things you're doing with your painting. So great to be able to catch up with you and looking forward to our next conversation together.
And next time you're in New York, we have to get together.
I agree with you. I'm making my plans, and I will definitely keep you posted for sure.
Okay.
You have my word.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your kindness and generosity.
Oh, the pleasure's definitely all mine, Linda. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Now let's go make today amazing. Take care.